Hi, this is Rob Marshall, director of Memoirs of a Geisha.
And John DeLuca, I'm the co-producer and choreographer.
And second unit director, John.
Thank you.
That's an invaluable part of the process. And we're here watching our movie. It's very exciting to be here together. We worked on this project for what, John, 2 years altogether?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And
2 hard, long years.
And wonderful years. I believe were rewarding. And it was an honor, I have to say, an honor to bring Arthur Golden's incredible novel to the screen. I mean, I really, when I look at this, I think of his work, because this all came from him. And he's such a master. This was his first novel, which, when you think about it, is quite extraordinary. And obviously, this is all seen through this young child's perspective, as you see her open up the curtain to see what's going on. And that's how Arthur wrote it, actually. It was interesting, John. He said to me that he wrote this 3 times. The first time he wrote it, the first 2 times he wrote it in third person, and it wasn't until he wrote it from the first person as a child, seen through her eyes and through her voice, that he really felt it came to life.
Rob really insisted on having this scene start in Japanese. We had shot it also in English.
We have these two wonderful actors here, and everybody spoke Japanese in these scenes, so I just felt that we needed to enter a completely foreign and unique world, and also be in this position where you feel discombobulated, and as young Chiyo does here, she doesn't know what's happening in her life, and she's disoriented, as we are as viewers, hopefully. That's the wonderful actor Mako
playing her old father,
old Sakamoto. He was incredible in The Sand Pebbles, John. So many great movies. This opening was incredibly hard to create, because there's so much rich material at the beginning of this novel, and both Robin Swycourt and I worked very closely with Arthur Golden trying to figure out how we would condense the opening of this movie, condense the novel so we could put it in the movie, and it was not easy. There's so much rich material, but really thought that being ripped from her family was sort of the first sort of violent act that changes and thrusts her life forward into a completely different world.
There are also many more words here, much more dialogue that Rob chose to just delete and just really move this at a breakneck speed.
Mm-hmm. I think the beginning of a movie is so key. I actually learned that in theater from Hal Prince. Funnily enough, how important the first 10 minutes of anything is, because it really sets the tone and the world and the energy and the movement of something. And I think that's something that's so true about film. And now we hear, for the first time, English. This is our narrator, and who's the older Sayuri's voice. And it's almost as if she's translating her story for us now. We've heard the Japanese up until now, and now we begin to hear this this story told in English.
For the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I knew my mother.
And then from then on, the dialogue is all in English. And the story is sort of told to us that way. It's interesting. I see these two train stations. We shot this actually up in Sacramento, if you can believe it. And they were literally 100 yards from each other. The train station she gets on and the train station she gets off, it's the same train. And now we're in our Hanamachi, which was the incredible set that we built. John Meyer, our production designer, created this world for us. And it was very difficult because we wanted to shoot in Japan, but we found that there were very few areas that had a series of streets that still looked like they did. And this takes place in 1929 here. And so we realized early on that we were going to have to build. And of course, shoot in Japan for many things that were untouched by modern times, like gardens and shrines and temples and things.
There she is.
Yes, the entrance of Gong Li, the great, great actress from China, so well known. And it's the first geisha we see in the movie as well.
She floats off into the night.
She does. What they call it, butterfly of the night. This is very. You can still feel this when you're in Kyoto now. You can see a glimpse of a geisha sort of disappearing down a side alley. It's really quite remarkable.
As I watch, I just remember, Rob, what you'd always said. You wanted everything veiled. You wanted to be seeing through fabric.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to create this mystery throughout, and it's just...
The shot here, John, do you remember? It was the first shot that we shot in the movie.
Yeah.
Our first day of shooting. Right here, this is shot through, I don't know if you can see, it's through these series of beads, the sort of side shot there. And that's something that Dion Beebe and I worked very hard on, to create a mysterious and exotic and sensual hidden world, and wanted to give a sense that we were peering into this world. And so we constantly shot through fabric or bamboo or screens of some kind to give a sense of a hidden world.
How old are you?
The actress here, Kori Momoi, who's one of the great actors of Japan, she plays Mother. Here she's making her first time I actually see her face full. She's an extraordinary actor who worked for Kurosawa. And people call her the Meryl Streep of Japan. And I think you can see why sometimes, don't you, John? She has such range.
She never ceased to surprise me, take after take. And even watching the movie over and over, though it's in the can, I see a new spark from her every time I watch.
Very alive. And then also in this scene, Sai Chin, incredible actor who's done great movies, Joy Luck Club, You Only Live Twice, John.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Bond girl. And then Suzuka Ogo, who was our young Chiyo here, who has never spoken a word of English until she did this movie. She did a movie with Ken Watanabe in Japan, and that's how we found out about her. Francine Maisler, our casting director, and Yoko helped us find her, and Ken was the one who really brought her to our attention.
We saw a tape of her and fell in love.
Fell in love. Even though she couldn't speak English.
She could. She did a little ballet dance, remember?
Yeah. One of the great challenges on this film, I'd say, was the language for everybody. Because we had Japanese actors, Chinese actors, speaking everything from Mandarin to Cantonese to Japanese and on the set. And so I worked with interpreters to speak to these actors. And thank God we had the rehearsal we had, because if we didn't have that rehearsal time prior, I think it would have been a little more complicated on the set. I don't know if we would have gotten anything shot during the day. But I'll tell you, I was blown away by how these actors learned English. I mean, right here we have a Japanese girl, and then we have a young girl who lives up in Massachusetts, Zoe Weizenbaum, who's playing Young Pumpkin. And they couldn't speak to each other, but kids are great because kids find their way. They they had little sign language that they did to each other. It's great.
There's the water thing that we just see running through the kitchen there, and that little moat there. We don't
You'll see the water imagery throughout. It starts with the fishing village, Sean, where we began the water. Of course, we had so much more material, right?
We have a beautiful fishing village scene.
Yeah, sequence there that we had to let go because it's important to jump into. For me, it was important to jump into this, into the story, and send us into this world. But the water, you'll see, for instance, here, you'll see water throughout because it really represents her journey. She is water. It's one of the first things that's said by the narrator, and that is that even though water meets an obstacle, it finds a new path, and that really is her journey. I think she continues to move forward even when she faces adversity, and I think that's what separates her. It's the water in her, the blue in her eyes. Colleen Atwood was our costume designer on this movie, and we were fortunate to have worked with her before in Chicago. In fact, we carried a lot of people from Chicago with us onto this movie. We, not only the costume designer, but also the production designer, John Meyer, and the cinematographer, Dion Beebe. Another example here, John, of shooting through fabric. Mm-hmm. And
the screens.
Yeah. That was really a wonderful, comfort for me to have people I'd worked with before, and it really gave me a sense of security, and we have sort of found a language, and I think this was the challenge of a lifetime for all of us. I mean, everybody said it to me every day, didn't they, John?
Yes. And it's also, they're also not only uniquely and sublimely gifted, but they're just great collaborators.
They are. They're great collaborators.
That's the way Rob works.
Yeah. I like to involve people in decisions, but in everybody, we talk about if I'm having a meeting about, for instance, Gong Li's kimono here, the sort of robe that she's wearing here. I want the cinematographer and the production designer and everyone to be aware of the color we've chosen and why, and so try and involve everybody. I think it's maybe coming from theater. Gong Li was making her, or is making her English language debut in this movie as well.
Boy, did these actors work hard on their English.
Goodness. We had, during rehearsal, we had about 7 rooms going at the same time. One room I'd be working on the scene work, and in another room John would be doing the dance work. And then there was a room where there would be dialect and language work, obviously. A couple rooms working on that. We had a room where Liza Dalby, our geisha expert, was teaching shamisen and how to move and walk and pour sake. Tea ceremony was taught. It was intense. It was intense. Mm-hmm. But I did feel, I have to say, I felt very, I guess honored is really the word, to be working with these great actors, even though they were, not speaking English. I really felt like I had a great communication with them, because I think great acting really transcends language.
And their commitment was paramount. They had such immense respect for their characters.
True.
And for the piece on the, as a whole.
True.
Father has determined it is off to school with you. You are...
It's so interesting. The child here has no idea what a geisha is. She's in this, this is very Dickensian in a way, isn't it?
Mm.
Being taken from your family, sold into slavery with no sense of what your life will be. And this is a great example of the streets that we built, especially this this one of our bigger shots coming up here. This is, it begins here, this one shot. And we crane up here, and you get a sense of the our village, which is actually in north of Los Angeles in Ventura, which is hard to imagine, but it was the only way we could control not only the period, which was the 20s and the 30s and the 40s when this is takes place, pre-war Japan, post-war Japan, but also all four seasons, spring, summer, winter, and fall. This here, funnily enough, right here, that transition right there, we are now in out in San Francisco at Golden Gate Park. All our secrets are being revealed, John, I think. Mm-hmm.
But it was so beautiful after coming back from Japan and having this world come to life, because we saw little pockets of it, as Rob said, and then to see the whole town take shape as it would have looked.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. We could never have done this without going to Japan. For instance, we went to the Sea of Japan, hoping to shoot there, and that was what helped us find the Sea of Japan, the opening sequence. We looked for Northern California was unbelievably similar in terms of terrain, in terms of the look. So that that was invaluable. I mean, obviously, the whole point of this movie is to take us to a different world. And then, of course, we were lucky enough to shoot in Japan. And you've seen examples of that already, the shots of the mountains.
This dance teacher in that last scene was Miyako Tachibana,
who
was my Japanese dance assistant.
Yes.
I also had an American, Denise Faye, was also on board.
Mm-hmm.
But Miyako was invaluable in terms of keeping me on track.
Yep.
And inspiring me.
Yeah.
Here we are in Granny's room.
Mm-hmm. I think she's seeing what's interesting here for me, and it's one of the things that actually Gong Li helped me with as we worked on this, and that is giving Hatsumomo a fully dimensional character so that she doesn't just become this evil geisha who's territorial. She also, we see her with her lover. I mean, one of the most incredible things about the geisha world is that at this time, geisha never married, and they had no choice in terms of love. They had no choice in terms of who they loved. So if there was a love of theirs, it had to be secret and hidden, and that's what Chiyo catches a glimpse of out the window. And I think ultimately it's that lack of being able to own your own heart that I think really destroys Hatsumomo ultimately. I remember, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I remember working on this scene, John, I'm sure you're going to say the same thing.
I was.
This scene was extraordinary in that both of these actors, neither of them speak English. So Gong Li is Chinese, and Suzuka, who is Japanese, are speaking to me through interpreters. And I'm speaking to them through interpreters, and they can't speak to each other except in the scene in English. And
but the truly remarkable thing was, as we continued filming, you know, it's always hard to make a day to finish your filming on time, and Rob's always trying to work as quickly as possible. He literally would forego the interpreters. He would understand. I don't know how he did it, but I would look. How did you know what she said? But there was some kind of communication that was deeper than the words, which was beautiful.
Thank you, John. I think it was. I think it's just because after a while you get to know actors and you know what they're feeling even before they tell you. And certainly shorthand was something important. Also, charades helped a lot. This is Eugenia Yuan, wonderful actor, who plays her friend Corinne.
Again, filming through the
What did you see?
This is also another moment for Chiyo to get a sense of how forbidden it is for someone to mention a boyfriend's name in this world.
You just jealous.
You notice there are no men in the Yokias. It's all women.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, it really is extraordinary that it was a woman-run business even then. I mean, every single tea house owner and every Kia owner, every mother, obviously, it was all women-run. When we went to Kyoto, we were to do some research on the movie. It was fantastic. We brought the entire team. And we were entertained by geisha at the Ishiriki Tea House, which is sort of the famous tea house, where the novel takes place as well. And also we saw young Maiko got made up, didn't we, John, from top to bottom. And there was an incredible moment I'll never forget when we were watching this Maiko, which means apprentice geisha, get made up. The mother of the Okiya came in and was very nice to us and said hello in Japanese, and then she started screaming at this young geisha, young Maiko, in Japanese, going, "Come on, let's go. You're late. You got to move it." And then you realize how important time is for them, because it's money.
I remember looking at you. It was like, boy, something went off. It was like it still exists.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, that's a big part of Mother's character, obviously. She's running the Sokia, and that's how they live off this one geisha. Everyone in that household lives off of Hatsumomo. But, of course, as you see, she's the rebel geisha. And although one of the most popular, most beautiful geisha, she really is sort of the one who is... one who doesn't really follow the rules.
And you can imagine at this time how much more important it was to be a head geisha, because those geisha were the trendsetters of their time.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we took liberties with the look was because for me it was important to establish that they were the supermodels of their time. We needed to see them in a more glamorous way than a sort of a documentary, sort of authentic style. This is all a fable. I saw it as a fable. And I think that was very important. You know, we did an enormous amount of research for, I can't even tell you how long, so we would know from where to depart. And we only departed, I mean, I only felt we needed to depart from the reality of this world in order to serve the story. And it's told through a child's eyes, and it was important, really, to see it that way.
That was the one blessed freedom Rob gave all of the creative team, was he wanted us to do the research as if we were filming a documentary, but then let it go and let your own artistic sense come in.
That's all we can really do as artists, I think. It's your impression of the world. And I certainly wasn't interested in doing a documentary of this fable. And I think it gave everybody the chance then to bring their artistry to it. You're right, John.
And we were religious in changing all the names of the towns and the tea houses. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. This is not Kyoto, but Miyako. And this is the Hanamachi, not the Gion.
Yeah.
Another water image here. It was very helpful. I mean, transitions to me are very important in film. Because otherwise you feel the stop and start of scenes, and it's important for me to sort of at least make the attempt at trying to find seamless ways of moving in and out of scenes so you don't feel that kind of, you know, the seams. The water imagery really helped me as the transitions were created.
What you put this poor little girl through.
She was the trooper. I mean, I'll never forget. Suzuka was amazing. I mean, I think that the harshest part of this geisha's life is at the beginning of this story. And I would say to her things like, you know, today you're going to walk in rain, and then you know, fall off a roof and get whipped and learn that your parents have died. And she'd say to me,
okay.
Because that's what you could say in English, okay. But I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like it.
And still kept that smile on her face, even though she was in the rain and got whipped. How many takes? Take
amazing.
After take.
Amazing. Extraordinary. Here she is in the running in the rain, freezing cold, it's something that Suzuka and Z shared was this, and is this incredible joy and spirit. So matching that, and I also think they happen to resemble each other in many ways, but that wasn't what was important to me. What was important to me really was that the inside, the spirit, was something they shared, and it was incredible to find them. I really feel unique in that way, right, John?
Mm. We were lucky. Mm-hmm. We did scour Japan and the...
Yeah.
We went everywhere looking for these characters.
Yeah. This is a portion of the set that we redressed, actually, to make it look like sort of the sort of more down part of our village. Obviously, she's on the other side of the tracks here. It's very much like Amsterdam. The Japanese prostitutes at that time used to sit in the window, as we just saw. You'll see another one coming up here. They sit in the window and wait for customers there. What's interesting about Satsu here, obviously a 15-year-old who sold into prostitution, is that it makes it seem as though Chiyo's life, even though she's, you know, works as a slave in a geisha house, is so much better. If you see, for instance, instead of the full white geisha makeup, the prostitutes only wear their makeup on the neck so as to not smear, because they have customer after customer. So you see it just goes up to the chin. And the obi is tied in front, if you can see that, where Chiyo's obi is tied in the back. It's tied in the front so it can be quickly loosened and unloosened. Shocking when you think about a child of this age, John, being being sold into prostitution.
And for people who don't know, the obi is that piece of fabric that goes around their waists.
Thank you, John. When I think about the father at the beginning of this novel and beginning of this movie, making that decision, that unbelievable decision, though his wife is dying and he doesn't have much of a choice, but I think he believed truly that both of his daughters would be in working in a geisha house. I don't think he had any idea that his one daughter would be sold into prostitution.
I can't even fathom that choice. I mean, just I can't even really. It's hard for me to.
I think it really was about no choice, really.
Yeah.
Obviously, as we talked about before, the only way a geisha can have her own love is to hide. I have to say, when I watched the scene, John, that Gong Li could possibly be one of the greatest actors I'll ever work with in my life.
I remember when
I was just astonished filming this scene because of the amazing passion and depth and commitment. Unbelievable. And not to mention the beauty.
I caught her stealing. She was running away with her receipts for the whore.
Thank God we had created a cast on for Chiyo, so that when she was being whipped, she wasn't feeling it at all. That was very hard to make a child do. She was extraordinary once again.
Take her
This next scene coming up was very difficult for Li, as we called her, Gong Li.
Yeah, and in China, Gong is the last name, Li is the first, so her name's really Li Gong in our way of speaking.
You are never to see him again.
When Pietro, our wonderful editor, and I put this together, the scene together, we really worked hard to be able to stay on Gong Li as long as possible here, as you see, because she goes through so many emotions, from anger to humiliation to sadness. Of course, she sees the child who's basically ruined her life. And Gong Li and I talked a lot about that, this exact moment being the moment that really changes her view of Chio.
He would give her notes through tears. We would stop filming and then she would just weep. She'd let it all out and then we'd go back and shoot it. Then she'd hold on to it again.
Mm-hmm.
She was remarkable.
Mm-hmm. So obviously Chio's trapped here with no place to go and desperate to meet her sister. This is what I love about this character, you know. She tries to take destiny into her own hands, even though she's told she can't. This is a sequence we storyboarded, and it was much longer sequence on the roof, this escape. And, John, you choreographed this whole sequence.
I remember working on this. I had a double before Susan, because you were using Susan in some scenes, and I had a double. And then she came onto the set. She just appeared. And she came up to me and asked me if she could do it. Mm-hmm. And she did everything. She did every bit of what you're seeing.
Right.
She wanted to be up there.
Yeah.
And she falls. This is her falling and catching herself and everything.
It's fun, though, for kids. I think it'd be fun. I'd want to do it, too. This is all built on a soundstage because obviously she can't be that high up with a child. So you have, and we didn't have to use any harnesses or anything like this. So this really is about, what would you say, John, about 20 feet up or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
I have to bring up John Williams here for a moment, John, because who did this incredible score. I'm so lucky to have him, and it was... I'll never forget sitting down with him at lunch at the commissary at Sony, and he said to me, I've never asked to do a film before, but I'd like to ask to do Memoirs of Acacia. And I think he really wanted to do something different and something challenging. And I was in heaven from beginning to end with him. He is such a gentleman, so elegant, and such an artist. And he did something also that he said he rarely does. For this sequence right here, there were three different options, which I couldn't believe. Very different as well. Some more abstract than others. Thrilling to work with. Thrilling to work with. That transition was something that worked out earlier on because I wanted to find a way to abruptly move into the scene and not actually see the landing of the fall, you know.
Quite a dead. Huh? Kimono destroyed. Geisha school, rice and pickles, train ticket, Mr. Beck, all this on top of the money I paid Mr. Tanaka.
I love that cigarette in there because this sort of explains Kaori, who plays mother. I remember we were going to put tobacco in that little pipe because that's a sort of a period pipe from that time. And we started putting the tobacco, and she said, oh, that would take too much time for mother. So she just shoved the cigarette right in there. It just shows that she only thinks from character, which is great.
This was her audition scene. I remember she screen tested with this, and Rob and I watched it, and we both said, no, she's too young and too beautiful.
Yeah.
She was really, she's a beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just said, wait.
Wait.
And then we watched
her. Yeah.
Won over.
Yeah.
You know, these funeral tablets.
Yeah.
That any Japanese watching would know.
Yeah. Right now, you know that the parents have died. But for us, for the Western audience, we don't understand until we actually hear the words. But those are funeral tablets. There was so much that we learned. One of the joys of doing this piece was because we spent 2 years on this, you can enrich your life by learning so much about another culture. I've always been fascinated by Japan, but to be able to really sink our lives into the world and immerse ourselves into this world, it was an incredible and rewarding and difficult and ultimately amazing experience, really.
And to see the cultures coming together as well on the set. The interactions and the joy and the laughter and the tears and the fears and it was
you know, our Pan-Asian cast was very proud to be working with each other. I think that was incredibly exciting for them. And I know that they were in awe of each other.
My sister.
I felt that so palpably over at the Japanese opening, the world premiere.
Yeah, yeah.
They were so proud that a quote-unquote Hollywood movie had been made without a huge, huge box office star.
Right. I remember we were on the front of Time Asia, and they were the first sort of Pan-Asian cast, and it was very exciting. I should probably explain my philosophy about casting, as we're about to meet the brilliant Ken Watanabe as the chairman.
It is too pretty a day to be signed.
Like I said before, they had worked together in a film, and they had played father and daughter, and that's how we found out about Suzuka. But Ken was such an obvious choice for this role. I met him the day after the premiere of The Last Samurai in New York and went to his hotel room. And I'll never forget when he opened the door, I was really expecting to see kind of this imposing samurai tough guy. And what I met was this charming, elegant, lovely man who, to me, was the chairman immediately. He's so funny. And what I realized, and as we began talking, is that he'd never played a role close to himself. And this, in many ways, was freeing for him, I think. He got to play something that was really closer to who he is. But in terms of casting, I think one thing I would say, John, and I know you know this, obviously, but just to share it with everybody, is that I really feel that it's a simple idea, and that is the best person for the role gets the role. And every one of these actors claim their roles, and that's the great hope as a director. You hope that they'll walk in and you'll meet them and they'll say, "This is mine." You know, when I think about this scene, such an important scene, because this small little meeting, this accidental meeting, changes the course of her life. I think because I think for the first time, this child experiences an act of kindness in a very cruel world.
Smile for me, won't you? There now, that is a gift to me. This will buy you supper. Now promise me one thing. Next time you take a tumble, no frown. That's better.
That smile.
Yeah. I don't think, obviously, the chairman has any idea what he's done here. He's just seen a sad girl that reminded him probably of his children. But he changes this young girl's life forever. It really is the thing that makes it uniquely a fable, isn't it, John?
Mm.
That something like that can change a child's life. Now we enter Japan, this incredible Fushiminari shrine in Kyoto, which is literally 5 kilometers of those orange torii gates working their way up a hill. Absolutely exquisite.
I remember you seeing and said, it's in the film.
Yeah.
If we can get it, if we can secure the location.
And it doesn't hurt to have Isak Proman playing the violin here either. John Williams came up with this wonderful concept, which was that the chairman would be represented by the violin and ultimately played by Isak Proman, and Sayuri's voice throughout her theme would be played by the cello, which is in our film played by Yo-Yo Ma. So we had two of the greatest soloists in the world playing the two main characters' themes. This was an incredible temple in Kyoto that we filmed, and to me it's the end of Act One. The only reason we got permission to shoot at that temple, if you recall, John, is that the head monk loved the movie Chicago, which I couldn't quite believe. Because
we took it, though.
It took an enormous amount of time to secure the rights to shoot in some of these places in Japan, over a year. And Patty Wichter, our executive producer, was
tenacious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good word for her.
Exactly.
Did you find it yet?
Pumpkin, time to go.
I found it.
Now we meet Yuki Kudo, who plays Pumpkin, older Pumpkin, and obviously Zi Zhang as Sayuri. Or Chiyo's still here, right, John? Hasn't become Sayuri.
Don't poke your neck forward like a tortoise.
She's not ready?
I remember when this coat with a chinchilla collar came on to the set. People's mouths literally fell open.
This time, chew your shamsin before you play. When you make a fool of yourself, your big sister gets the blame. Stop crying. Your face will be red.
You know, it's interesting. I look at Z here, and I remember how many women we saw for this role, John. Extraordinary. Because the demands of this role were huge. She had to be... Here she plays 15. She had to age from 15 to 35. She had to be a great actor and a great beauty. She had to, obviously, speak English. And she had to become a great dancer, a brilliant dancer, because not only does she dance in this movie, but she had to, in a very short amount of time, learn how to be a geisha, which actually takes a lifetime to learn. So she was
and everything, the way you tilt your head, the way you hold your purse, the way you
turn your feet, John, when you walk, everything is a dance.
And having that knowledge of the physical really, really...
I mean, here she doesn't have any of that. Right now she's just the awkward teenager who hasn't had any lessons because for the past whatever years...
She's a slave.
But then the transformation happens and you start seeing the transition, and that would never have happened without a great dancer. We could never have taught that. It's interesting. We didn't hire any geisha, so to both our Japanese and Chinese actors, we had to teach them how to be geisha.
We auditioned geisha.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Couldn't really act.
Well, the language really...
Yeah,
is
the language is strong too, yeah.
And the role does demand such emotional depth.
Yeah.
And she has to carry the picture.
Mm-hmm. This was invented from something that wasn't in the novel. Her seeing him. Robin Swycord and myself felt it was really important to see the older actor meet him before, because I think you don't really make that, I don't know, that connection unless you see this actor see him. So this that little moment was something that was created.
And you also, I remember you saying, you also wanted to keep the chairman alive, mm-hmm. which was, I think, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she here?
Now we have the entrance. Well, we saw a glimpse of her before at the top of the stairs, but now we have the proper entrance of one of our favorite people, John Michelle Yeoh, as Mameha.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A great leader for the company, I have to say, too. Mm-hmm. She'd worked with Z before in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She never worked with Gong Li before, but knew her well. I think kind of knew her from around cinema, obviously, and became great friends with Ken Watanabe and Corey Momoi. She just really is an extraordinary leader.
Mm. And I think to know her is to just warm to her.
Yeah, immediately. Well, she's very much like Mameha, I think.
Yes, she is.
She's wise and elegant and kind.
I can always sell you to Mrs. Tatsuo. With your eye for beauty and nose.
What's interesting about this scene is that what's being said is not really what the scene's about. It's all these little formalities. It's very Japanese in a way, because it's all, you know, the Japanese have this incredible formality to their language and to their way, where ultimately when I've dealt with them, and I know many people feel this way, that they rarely say no. But even when they mean no. So you have to learn. It's very gracious, actually, I have to say. But that's very much what the scene is about. It's really, this little move of the teacup is very much like a chess move. And that's really what this scene is. It's a little chess game between these two very strong women.
If Chiyo hasn't repaid her debt within 6 months after her debut.
Impossible! Too little time!
Then I will pay you twice over.
Why? No geisha could ever.
This is very much a sort of a Pygmalion kind of thing when you say John. Mm. Shaw. It's Dickensian in a way, too. The woman that comes to be the mentor to the young apprentice.
In a mysterious way.
In a mysterious way, exactly.
She isn't doing it for the money. That much is for certain. Rumor has it. Ever since the Prime Minister bought her Mizuage,
she's been rich.
Mizuage? That so?
I remember when I read the novel Mizuage, to me, maybe it's because I know French or something. It was Mizuage or something to me.
I had a hard time.
It was incredible learning all of this. And it was really helpful. Jessica Drake was our dialect coach on this. And do you remember, John, we all learned, of course, all of the exact pronunciations of everything. But she was very helpful. And I remember giving us lists of things and how they're said and, you know, and obviously trying to coordinate all these different actors. I mean, we have two Chinese actors here and a Japanese actor here, and it's both Lee and Z are speaking English for the first time in a film, and Yuki Kudo as Pumpkin actually lives in Los Angeles and speaks English beautifully, so she actually had to bring some of her Japanese accent back into her language as the other actors were learning to reduce their accents.
This tiny world of women, friend turned against friend. And now the two greatest geisha in Miyako are at war over me. Hatsumomo at my back, Mameha calling, offering me the chance to become one of those.
This is, once again, our Hanamachi John Meyer built, and obvious example of having to do it in another completely different season. Here we are in winter. And this is Kari Tagawa, who plays the Baron.
Mameha's Donna.
Mameha's Donna. And remember, John, he was in The Last Emperor. He role in The Last Emperor.
That's right,
yeah.
Yes.
And he was thrilled to be working on this movie. I remember how happy he was.
And again, as Michelle just said, this Donna is their patron.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think here we begin to learn really what a geisha is. I don't think it's really clear that a geisha studies the way she does until we begin this whole sequence.
I see water. And do they study?
Yeah.
Every geisha I would come upon, I would ask about their lives, and the first thing everyone said was, I have no time. They work, they dance all day and study the shamisen and entertain at night and then sleep 4 hours and get up the next morning.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Go back to study 2 days off a month.
Well, they're about to, you know, Michelle's actually about to say that they are moving works of art, which is really what they are. Everything about them is a performance, you know. They are there to entertain as performers.
Matsumomo cannot tolerate competition.
She's jealous of you?
Not me, I'm afraid. Someone closer to home. Rise.
She's so naive, ultimately, isn't she, John? That she's not aware that Hatsumomo's jealous, actually, of her. How could she be jealous? How could this great geisha be jealous of this young girl? What she doesn't see is because she has no self-esteem at all. She feels worthless. She has no idea how special she is, how beautiful she is.
And clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of becoming a great geisha is being able to not only entertain the men, but also have great repartee and know what's going on in current events. And they read the papers. You have a gift for expression. And know all that's going on.
It's very, it really is, John. It's an extraordinary profession, and that it's unbelievably competitive. And you have to, I mean, especially at this time, this is sort of the heyday of the geisha. And I would say that they really had to, I mean, without question, be at top of their form. There were so many geisha to survive. Like I said before, the geisha were the ones that were the breadwinners for each house. And I don't think people realize either that a geisha could go to 10 or 12 tea houses in a night. That would be a normal night of work. This was exciting to create the sequence because two things are happening at once. Obviously, as we progress through the montage of her becoming a geisha, we also see at the same time she's preparing for her debut. And so we're going back and forth between the two. And this felt actually, in a funny way, very much like a musical number as we created this, didn't it, John? Because it was all about transitions. It felt like a piece. And in an odd way, this is the centerpiece of the movie. We had, it's always very tricky in film because you have to condense material. And so in a short amount of time here, we had to show all the different things that she had to do to become a geisha. And it's, she's a very short amount of time to become one. But the fact that she's a natural is something that is, that helps her, obviously. Here, for instance, having to play the shamisen after putting her hands in ice, so that the idea is that when you're nervous and you have to play the shamisen you feel like your fingers freeze, you'll have been able to master the feeling of that and be able to play through that. This is a shot of our dog,
right,
Gilly.
There behind the wheel.
Here she is. She was on the set every day. But the transitions, for instance, of falling into that rice, John, coming out of that into the powder of the powder box there.
It does all move like a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And this, we were lucky also, we wanted to find a Mameha that had knowledge of dance.
Had to, because she had to be the teacher, obviously, so she had to be a brilliant dancer as well. And Michelle studied in London at the Royal School of Ballet.
And really did beautiful in our geisha classes.
Yeah. No, she's I mean, many people know her from her martial arts work and so forth, but she's an unbelievably physical person and a great dancer and learned so much about becoming a geisha very quickly and knew that she had to do that to become to play Mameha and really be the teacher.
Well, dancers also, the discipline is crucial in a dancer's life. They're disciplined to a fault. And with that, you understand the discipline of a geisha.
True. I mean, so many interesting details. Obviously, painting your eyebrow with charcoal. I mean, that you literally have just, you know, blown out and extraordinary. And here comes, this is the wax that is put through their hair, which... It's odd combination of beauty and cruelty and the harshness of their life, what they have to go through to become this incredible thing that is a geisha, which is almost impossible to really explain ultimately what it is. I think that's what the movie is in some ways, trying to explain what that is.
And their lush pillows.
Unbelievable. That's the idea, obviously, is that you can't fall off the pillow to ruin your hair. So the rice is put there, and now she obviously has to go back to the the beauty parlor and have it done again. It's just part of the training. I can't imagine. I'm sorry. I can't even imagine sleeping on a pillow like that. Along with your thing,
along
John?
With that torture of that hot wax and the hairdo, comes this bald spot that. The geishas have at the top, the crown of their heads.
Yeah, it's a really sign of achievement.
Yeah, they're proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And all the many, many layers of the kimono.
Extraordinary how many layers there are. I remember we would have the actors, we'd call the actors, and I'd find out, oh, well, you know, someone's in wardrobe and they're dressing. And I would, at the beginning of the process, I thought, oh, well, they'll be on the set in about 15, 20 minutes. And it was an hour later, because it literally took an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, to just put on the kimono, because it's layer after layer after layer.
You are ready.
And so ends the sequence, our montage, and the idea obviously is that everything that she's been preparing for in those little snippets is this her debut as a Maiko.
And her test.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we were at the tea house that one night, Rob, they give you, being in the seat of authority that evening, the young Maiko made her debut. Do you remember?
Yes,
and she
yes.
spilled your...
Yes, he was mortified. Of course, I was like, that's fine with me.
But the first thing she did was spear his beer and sake all over.
Yeah.
And was mortified.
She was mortified. You are not making my... But you see just how even Z's holding her hands there, how she's holding her head, how she's turned in that wonderful spray of sparks over her shoulder by Auntie, which is for luck.
That's
and then
fun.
Having to walk in these incredibly difficult shoes. I remember we did that as all as one shot. We cut into that, but we actually did that whole long shot as one long crane. Was it a crane shot, John? It was a dolly shot, actually, wasn't it? Both,
dolly.
Both, yeah. You will
be known as... This is our sister's ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Once again, shooting through. This is actually through a wall. A cutout in a wall, stone wall.
My new name. I felt little Gio disappear behind a white mask with red lips.
You know, when I think about this movie, John, I also, you know, think very much about our producers, Doug Wick and Lucy Fisher, and how incredibly supportive they were. They worked incredibly hard to get this to the screen. Steven Spielberg, who came along as producer as well for us, was, you know, it was how many years in the making? I mean, Steven at one point was going to be directing this movie, and it was, they held on to this because they believed so much in this. I think the universality of the story and the triumph of the human spirit, ultimately, I think was very important to them, and we were very lucky to be working with them as we shaped this from beginning to end.
They were very helpful in terms of script, and were there for every step of the way.
Every step of the way.
We have the pleasure to witness the debut. They're great collaborators and great friends.
This is very much looks like the Ishiriki Tea House in Kyoto. Very similar. It's actually based exactly on the room that we were entertained in, and it's all about this. It's you come to the tea house. This is where you perform. You are now on stage, and everything you do, as you see here, how she bows, how she is about to pour the tea here, as she pulls her sleeve back, and she reveals her wrist, which is a sign of sensuality.
Seduction.
This was reminiscent of what you were just talking about, the Maiko that during her debut, she fails.
Don't do this, Baron. It is her very first time.
So, John, this is your incredibly difficult fan dance.
Have cut down for...
Yeah.
To keep the story rolling along.
It's part of it, I know. It always is tricky.
Well, it was the same in Chicago. You know, as Robbie always said, he was a director and choreographer, and the director would always win.
You have to.
Keep the story moving, but she did a beautiful job on this.
The detail, I don't think in some ways it looks simple and effortless, but it's so difficult, isn't it, John?
Very difficult.
Because it's so exact. I mean, John, because you were a Bob Fosse dancer, I think that sort of isolation and attention to detail is something that comes more easily to you.
Well, like any dancer, and just the eye for detail. It's such a different form, because ballet and jazz and American stage is so up in the air and out of the ground, and this dancing is in the floor with pigeon-toed and... Mm-hmm. The ballet's pointed feet and extension out.
And how long did Gong Li work on this fan trick?
1,000 times a day. She would do it.
1,000,000 times.
Her name is Sayuri.
There were actually 3 tricks in there, and I said, choose one, and then she said, I'm doing them all. And then I didn't want her to, but Rob said, let her do them.
Well, she needed to upstage Sayuri. Lin Kuai did such an incredible hairdo for Hatsumomo here, and that little loose part that she shows that she's really the rebel geisha, because that's something a geisha wouldn't do.
There's so much I would like to say to Hatsumomo. Sometimes the smartest remark is silence. What better advice to follow?
Even how they pour that sake, John, is all—it's all very, very specific, isn't it?
Yes.
Of course. But it's been such a very long, long...
It's so interesting, because I think it really is a misconception as to what a geisha is in the Western culture. I mean, certainly I believe they were glorified prostitutes. I had no sense that the word geisha means artist.
She can destroy it. She would spread rumors.
And we realize their commitment to their arts was comparable to a New York City ballet dancer.
Very much so.
What can we do?
Now, of course, a geisha, you make a choice as a teenager, a 16-year-old. You don't start early now. At age 16, you make a choice that you want to become a geisha, like you would want to become a ballet dancer or a model. And I think they do it now really just to study the traditional arts.
We may find Nobu quite a challenge. He does not like geisha.
This was an incredible set that John Meyer built on a soundstage at Sony, if you can believe it. Obviously because we were recreating the sumo matches of the 30s. And one of the joys of this was, this is so authentic, everything about it. We had incredible sumo fighters, wrestlers with us. It was really an honor to have them.
Another Herculean effort by our executive producer, Patty Witcher.
Yes. I said I'd like to have some Japanese sumo wrestlers for the sequence, real ones. And she said, well, that's impossible. You can't do that. She didn't say you can't do that. She said, I think that's impossible, Rob. And I said, well, let's see if we can do it. And, of course, she delivered incredibly. Here they're introducing the fighters in the ring.
We are harnessing the power of water to bring electricity to some of the smaller villages.
It was in the news.
I liked very, very much that this whole sequence is very masculine, because we're introducing here Koji Yokusho, who plays Nobu. one of the great actors of Japan, who I think many know from the Japanese Shall We Dance. Somebody said to me early on, because I was just learning about these actors, had seen some of their work, had seen that, but didn't really know extensively their work. And Francine Maisler said, oh, well, he really is the Al Pacino of Japan. You know, so you really get a sense of who they are by comparing them to actors we know.
He really fought for this part. We saw him in Japan, and his English just wasn't up to it. Mm. And he kept working and working, came to L.A. and auditioned again and again and won it.
These are two very well-known wrestlers. These are the ones we had. And the referee is a national treasure in Japan. We went to the whole team, when we took our big trip to Kyoto at the beginning of this whole process, we actually went to Osaka and saw a sumo match. And it was great because we had the producers with us, we had the writer, we had all the designers, Dion Beebe, the cinematographer. And I can't imagine doing it any other way. We had to really experience it together. And I think we were all blown away by the beauty of the world. It was incredibly exciting to do that kind of research and really dig into, see if we could find what it was really like in the 30s.
And they really opened their arms to us. We were taken around and given a red carpet treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Only compare to his opponent. Miyagiyama may use hatakikomi.
This is a sequence that we actually found with Pietro, which was very exciting, Pietro, our editor. We needed to really underscore the fact that, obviously, Sayuri is seeing the chairman really for the first time as an adult. And we worked at sort of changing the sound here with our great mixers and Wiley Stateman, our sound designer. It was something that was a sort of a group effort, when you say, John.
Mm. All I can think of is that wonderful sumo wrestler, the smaller sumo wrestler.
Yeah.
And what he went through to make himself taller.
I know. He was too tiny to be one, so he actually had something implanted in the top of his head. They're both retired now, both of these wrestlers. They just recently retired, but they're very famous.
I see now why you like sumo. You can never judge a man's power by his appearance alone.
You see, she has the red underneath collar there, John, that's the sign of a maiko. And when you become a full geisha, it's changed to white.
Turning the collar.
Chose to use Japanese as a sort of a flavor throughout the film. So, because once again, this is being translated to us by this, as you hear by the storyteller, by the narrator, Sayuri. And so, I felt there are places where we didn't need to understand. We just needed to get the sense of the flavor. So you hear Japanese. A lot of the sort of background is all in Japanese.
It's part of the reason we loved using the accents and letting those accents become, you know, stay the way they were. The Japanese people have very thick accents, and I do feel as I'm watching it, I'm watching another world. It helps me. I think you've always felt that, Rob. But
yeah, I mean, I think I've always, one of the great things film can do is take you to another world. I'm certainly, it's something that one of my heroes, David Lean, was able to do so brilliantly, was really immerse you into a completely different world, whether it be Russia or India, Ireland, you know, and really feel like you are part of that world, and you're seeing all the odd intricacies of the life and the rituals, as you see.
What? Oh, I will do it for you.
Have you got mad?
Do you trust me or don't you? Well, go ahead.
This is This was a fun scene to film for Z, who's very funny, and she never gets a chance really in the film to show much humor, but obviously. The great thing about Z is we'd be doing very emotional scenes, and it would be over, and she would just, you know, she would come to life again, John, and just, you remember.
She's
just,
not precious with it.
No, she just loves life, and she's just infectious to be around. I really feel that an actor like Z comes along once in a generation, all the combination of all those things in one person.
This is our Dr. Crab.
Yeah, Randall Duck Kim.
Very prominent New York actor.
Mm-hmm.
New York stage actor.
Yeah. He read for every role in this movie, I think.
He did.
And the great thing about him as Dr. Crab for me was that it's kind of a loathsome character on the page. You know, even the sort of the characters that are creepy or odd, you still want to understand them and feel them and make them human, and he was able to do that. You like them, even if they're strange and odd.
And only she knew the rules. Ekubo. At the right moment, slip it to Nobu, discreetly.
Beautiful door of Mount Fuji there, John. I didn't really get to show that much of John.
Yeah.
John Meyer had all these incredible sets and pieces sent from Japan so that we could use. And a perfect example is in this scene, there are two tea houses, tea house restaurants that are connected to each other, and we call them the veranda restaurants. And if you look carefully, the one that Hatsumomo's on is sort of made of, almost looks like thorns, and Sayuri's restaurant, where she is all water design in wood. It's just something as subtle as that. John Meyer, you know, worked from the story to create these sets.
It is a trinket. I found it a few days ago.
Muzan. I had no idea you were so sensitive.
I remember one of the tricky things about this, John, if you recall, because at nighttime, for whatever reason, it was freezing where we were shooting. And so we were always concerned about the breath coming out, with, what's that called, John? Fog? Smoke? You know, you could see their breath. And so a lot of times they had to actually suck ice before the scene started, so there wouldn't be so much breath.
It helps.
It does help.
It doesn't.
Such a joyous moment, Sayuri. You're finally getting what you deserve.
This is a crucial scene for the chairman, obviously, because he sees Nobu's interest in Sayuri clearly, and it's you know, he saw it at the sumo match, obviously, but here he sees it actually really take on a whole nother form, and I think he realizes that he has to step away, which is of course his great tragedy, and it's something we don't learn about till the end of the movie, but it's I mean, one of the tricky things about this movie is that you're seeing it all from her perspective. So we don't learn much about what the chairman's going through. We have little glimpses of it throughout. And that was one of the challenges of editing, to be quite honest, was how much of the chairman's heartbreak can we see without giving away everything at the end. So we realize, obviously, that he's loved her all along. But that moment for him, I mean, Ken was extraordinary that way, because I would have to say to him, we have to see what you're feeling, but not in such a manner that you're indicating what you're feeling. I mean, it's a really fine line for him to tread. And it was not easy to do, but it was a real balancing act.
Men like that, we call this Mizuabe, and to become a full geisha, we must sell it to the highest bidder.
This is a tunnel we used three or four times in the movie, right, John?
Mm.
Because they're all over Kyoto, and they're wonderful. They really give a sense of that maze-like world of the geisha, of the Hanamachi, which means entertainment district.
And we would just redress them.
Yeah, redress them with different woods, different siding. All imported from Japan.
Mm-hmm. Pumpkin.
Here you hear John Williams' water music again, John. That mm-hmm. It feels like churning as her story continues to unfold. That was something that that John found for us, was this water theme.
Let's well?
No. My pumpkin always told the truth. But the truth.
When I see this scene, I think of Dion Beebe, because I think it's extraordinarily lit. I mean, he's able to do with light, with moonlight here, on these white faces, you know, and it's amazing to think that both of these characters as well are only 15, and they really are pawns in this game, and they have no control of their life, which is something that ultimately Sayuri resists, that she has to have the control. She has to be able to have a voice in her destiny.
Of course not. Is Mamiha-san cruel to you too? No. She's so kind to me. But sometimes I worry she's taking me further from the things I want.
I think it's an important line, isn't it, John? Hmm. Because the only reason she has any interest in becoming a geisha, really, is to reach this man. Because it's the one thing, it's the one hope that she has. She holds onto that handkerchief. It represents hope in a very hopeless world.
Don't worry about me, Chio-chan. I'll be fine. Better than fine. Mother plans to adopt me. So my dream about...
Poor pumpkin.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's very hard to find friends in this world. And the one poor person you should be close to is your older sister.
Mm-hmm.
Her older sister happens to be Hatsumomo.
Yeah.
So she's out there alone.
Mm-hmm.
Hatsumomo has poisoned Dr. Crab against me.
Another water transition, John.
Mm-hmm.
Takes us into the scene.
The chairman has been kind.
Nobu and the chairman. This is also in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, John, if you recall.
I do.
This scene, I remember, this happens sometimes. You carry a scene because it's a short scene or whatever, or you didn't make your day. That scene was carried, and we were gonna shoot that in a million different places.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one was the beauty shop.
Yeah.
I forget the number, but I bet Patty Witcher remembers the number of that scene because it was on the call sheet every day. I don't know if you recall, John, I was concerned about ripping down this poster because I thought it might be a little too similar to Chicago when Catherine Zeta-Jones rips down the poster at the beginning of the movie. But that's a silly concern, and it made such sense for the movie.
Speak to the director in private.
It's interesting, though. It's someone else, you know. She was ripping.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's show business is ripping.
Well, I mean, that's the irony about all this. One of the reasons I really wanted to do this film following Chicago was to do something completely different and do something dramatic and really stretch myself and try something that was new. And of course, that's very much what this was. But someone said to me, you know, you do realize that this is you're still doing this is still a story of women rivals in show business. So I guess there's something I don't know what's wrong with me, but something similar there, obviously. This is the first scene we shot with Z and with Michelle backstage. But it's just a wonderful backstage, don't you think, John? Because they're kneeling. It was so different than shooting a normal backstage. Obviously, this was an incredible theater that we found in Los Angeles that we completely gutted and created. I mean, all the audience are on their knees. They're all on pillows on their knees, And this, of course, is the Spring Dances, John, which you mm-hmm. did an enormous amount of work on. Remember, we struggled for the look of this, and when we decided to create a cherry blossom curtain, that was something that really set us free, because we wanted to invent this and make this slightly more modern in a way. So why don't you tell us the story, John, of this dance that you created here?
Well, it started from, I made a dance DVD, and one of the images that everyone fell in love with was with these 8-inch black lacquered shoes. And so I took it, and what I found out was that these courtesans wear them in these processionals. So I made her a courtesan, and she has been spurned by her patron, and flips out, goes crazy, and goes out in the snow, and goes and is off to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide being a huge theme in their dances.
So this is actually in some ways Kabuki inspired, is that right, John?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is, she knows this woman as well as she knows Sayuri Z. You know, she knows every movement means something, and
mm-hmm.
this poor woman will be, you know, all her earthly possessions now will be ripped from her.
Mm-hmm.
Colleen, our costume designer, worked very hard. I wanted this robe to be ripped off in the middle, and I didn't want to cut away. And she worked and worked and worked and worked and finally figured it out.
But the idea of this lonely figure in the snow, what's interesting about all of this and sort of the madness that she goes through and the fact that she ultimately is on her way to commit suicide, I think the reason that really struck a chord for both of us was the fact that it really in some ways mirrors the frustration of what she's going through in the real story. And the fact that she has no voice and can't speak, and the emotion behind having to hold on to all her secrets and not being able to love who she wants to love, all that frustration, I think, is why Sayuri succeeds so brilliantly in this dance.
Exactly. I would have long discussions with her about that. Once that curtain opened, she didn't even realize in rehearsals of her own rehearsing this dance in the film, of course, how much emotion she would have when she mm-hmm. went out in front of these people, and how much it correlated, how deeper mm-hmm. she would go.
Because she's dancing for the chairman. I mean, everything she says early on, she says, everything I will do now, from now on, will be for the chairman. And the fact that he's there and she sees him there in the audience, I think she realizes this is her chance to be seen. She's waiting for him to claim her. John, you introduced me to these incredible streamers.
This
I love them.
This is part of my dance video as well. These incredible Japanese, they use them as spiders on stage. And,
mm-hmm. and they're really kabuki streamers.
And we sent away for them. And
we thought, what a wonderful way for her to enter the party.
Of course, we call it the opening night party.
This was actually filmed at Yamashiro Restaurant in Los Angeles. We took it over, and it became so many things for our film. And it sits at high atop Los Angeles. Now everybody knows our secrets, John.
It's all out.
But you know, the great thing was being able to combine this location work with what we built and with our work in Japan. One of our players, John, who actually played in our actual orchestra for
yes.
John Williams.
Passionate performance, don't you think?
Indeed.
Omer, did you invite the chairman to my estate this weekend? It's my annual blog.
What are the name of those discs, John? Those red discs?
Sanangasa.
Sanangasa. And that's a traditional Japanese dance that the woman's doing behind there, right? In the background?
Yeah. There's not much vocabulary in that dance, but she's doing all of it.
That's great.
She's right there behind me.
Well, I love how the hat sort of is the disc as well.
It becomes part
of the design of the dance.
No, their props are just stunning. Mm. The magic they do with very simple props.
I think that's what we learned a lot about, which is the fact that simplicity in the design, the simplicity in their performance is I mean, is what it's all about, the subtlety.
And the care they give everything. It's mm-hmm. funny because when I go there, you always stay the same person no matter where you go or what you do. But you do, there are different aspects that come into your being. I place dishes down differently and I'm aware of different things when I'm in Japan.
This is Japan right here. This is actually the first shot that we shot in Japan. It's a bamboo forest just outside Kyoto. And we didn't have to do very much to it. Yeah. It's right there.
The most desired as well.
Her first trip in a car.
That was some car.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Maybach.
And here we are going to see the $100,000 cherry tree. Right there.
Yeah. It was interesting. We built that tree. John Meyer built that tree limb by limb and blossom by blossom. And, it really is very much like this incredible tree in Miriyuma Park in Kyoto, which is people come from all over the world to see this tree at cherry blossom time. And so we decided to build this grand party around the viewing of that one tree.
I've wanted to say to you for some time now. I'd like to thank you for your attention to Nobu-san.
This is one of the rare scenes between the two of them. It was very difficult actually sort of building a story, a quote-unquote love story, around characters that don't meet and talk much. It's a very unique love story in that way. They love from afar. And it's not until the very end where they're able to be truthful. I don't think people really understand, ultimately, how important in Japanese culture it is to respect another man's wishes, especially a friend. In our movie here, obviously, Nobu has given his life, ultimately, for the chairman and became scarred because of it. And so the chairman owes him this incredible debt, so much so he feels such he owes him such a debt that he can't step into the way of his love for this young woman who is the chairman's love. So it's extraordinary when you think about that, John, don't you? Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is that he holds that above his own heart.
Hey, well, I have a present for you.
But that's sort of one of the very few intimate moments they have.
I'll show you my kimono collection. It's quite venerated. My grandfather and father collected kimono before me. I've given a number of valuable kimono to Mamiya. I'd like to give presents to beautiful girls.
The idea behind the design of this kimono room was really a cage where she's caught. And once again, John helped Dion and myself create the sense of a different world, different space, peering in through the fabric here. And this is a really a museum quality kimono that he's giving her as a gift. It's one of the sort of more extraordinary kimono in the movie. There were thousands of kimono in the movie, but this one was. Is very rare. The detail is extraordinary.
Don't worry.
I interviewed Z at this function and asked her what the most difficult scene for the movie what it was for her, and she had said this scene.
Mm-hmm. Because she's in a position where she can't really fight because of the position she's in, which it doesn't make a lot of sense for a modern woman. So to place yourself in that kind of helpless position was so painful for her. And I remember we made a very conscious choice to show the layers of kimono as he takes them off her, instead of every single one when she's dressing for her debut, we were looking for a place to show the different layers and how much there was involved and how much binding there was and so forth. And it was during the sequence we thought, let's show it actually when it's coming off. And
as she clutches the handkerchief on the chair.
Yeah. We decided to shoot it in these mirrors, these incredibly antique mirrors, to really give a sense of her humiliation.
Right, it's not only happening to her, but she's seeing it reflected back.
She's seeing herself, exactly.
On the wind. So careless.
Dionne and I decided to shoot this whole sequence behind this glass. It was real. I really felt in many ways this was a kabuki play, this sequence, that where they confront each other. And I also wanted to give a sense of isolation, her isolation at the end when she's alone.
If you are found to be worthless,
I am not worthless.
That was a main trick.
Well, we didn't tell Z that Michelle would say her final line and exit with such fury. And we kept the camera rolling, and Z just broke. I don't like to do that normally. I mean, I think actors can really summon the emotion without having to play a trick, but we just felt that she needed to feel that great sense of despair, and that she's alone. And
she's the only woman that's given her anything in terms of friendship.
To have her turn her back on her was...
When she was wrong, too, I mean.
Right, exactly. So... It was something we just thought we'd try. And Z knows, I mean, it's very important for me to take care of my actors. I really feel that they have to feel comfortable. They have to feel safe so that they can actually try things and not be afraid of failure and be able to try anything without having to feel like they're being judged. So I don't like to do that normally, but I think it's something we tried.
What do you, Mameha? It goes to this Okia. All 15,000 yen. To this estate.
I do not understand.
That Sayuri will inherit as my adopted daughter.
What?
Adoption is such an important part of the Okia, because it really means that you have a future and that you have security for your life. Because when you become adopted, you also inherit the Okia. And Pumpkin's great fear, knowing that she's not a natural geisha, is that she will have no place to live out her life. And so she sees the writing on the wall, that this will not be her Okia, that she has no further life here, that she will not become a successful geisha, and that the only choice for her probably at this point would be prostitution.
Who paid for the silk on your back, the rest in your bowl?
Gong Li and I sat and talked about the scene. This was really something that Li felt was necessary. She said it wasn't in the original script. She really felt it was important that she and Mother go head to head, so that all the pretense is dropped.
Like a geisha. Like a common prostitute.
Because the downward spiral has begun.
But Sayuri?
And the shift of power has started here, obviously.
Legend.
She can burn a camera with her look so unbelievably powerfully. It's extraordinary. I mean, Gong Li is really a force.
We will see. Won't we?
Well, the depth of feeling. I remember her after her last night of filming, how you took her by the hand and walked through this Okia and she just wept. You both didn't speak, and she just wept.
She asked to walk each room and to remember what had happened in each room. And right, we didn't speak, but we just walked from each room. And she loved this character, and it was very hard for her to let it go.
Everything we wanted, you made happen. Thank you.
This is once again in our Hanamachi that we built. And we actually did something because the final line in this scene is, "Tonight, the lights in the Hanamachi all burn for you." That's what Mameha says to Sayuri. So because of that, we added more red lanterns than we normally would have. We wanted it to be filled with red lanterns to really give a sense that this is Sayuri's moment. And what's interesting is she has won, basically. She's become the great geisha, and her mizuwage has been sold. Her virginity has been sold for the highest amount ever. But it's such an empty win, because she's lost everyone around her. And all she really wants, ultimately, is to reach the man that she loves. I remember the scene with Michelle was interesting, because when we first shot it, she just wept during the scene. And then I took her aside and spoke to her. I said, "I'm so glad you feel that, and that you have that emotion. Now hold back and don't let us see any of that," which was something that was, she understood, because it's the role of Mameha, would never show that. She'd deeply, deeply hide it underneath. And
I give her a lot of credit for taking that direction and having that restraint, because while everybody's crying and throwing things, she holds on.
Yeah, she did. And I think it's what makes that scene powerful, is that she's able to still feel guilty for putting Sayuri in that position, even though her heart is breaking because she's lost the Baron. This scene, obviously, is when she gives up her virginity, which, if you can possibly imagine, is sold. Of course, this no longer happens, and I think it was one of the most controversial things about the novel, and one of the reasons why some of the older establishment in Kyoto, for instance, weren't pleased and didn't like the novel and don't like the story, because it seems to, you know, explore this idea of the selling of virginity. And obviously it happens no longer, but it did happen then. This was Kaori's final scene in the movie, I remember, her final shot. And I thought it was appropriate that it was her final shot in the film, because she's able to show a more human side to the character now that Sayuri is full geisha. Finally become a woman. You see in her face the emotion.
What are you doing in my room?
This is something that was completely invented, something I found we needed to do. This is the perfect example of how you have to take a novel and turn it into a film. You can't sometimes do something, which the novel does very well, of slowly unraveling a character like Hatsumomo until she kind of just falls apart. I felt we needed to do something more economical and something in some ways very operatic. And so that's why this scene of Hatsumomo's is this is really her final demise. There's a moment here, I guess we just passed it, right, John, where as they were fighting, you see the lantern has fallen, and that wasn't intended.
We choreographed it differently.
Yes, but because it happened, we decided that's how the fire will begin, just as an accident. So sometimes it's great, for me anyway, to really be on the lookout for mistakes, because sometimes they're better than what you have planned.
Give it back!
We wait for those mistakes.
You wait.
It's hard to pray for mistakes.
We choreographed this fight very, very carefully. And the incredible thing about these two actors is we started showing them what to do. And they said, what is all this? All this choreography. And they just jumped into it and started fighting with each other, throwing each other around.
And again,
so
we had
physical
doubles for them to show them. No,
yeah.
they wanted to do it all themselves.
No, they had to feel it, yeah. But see, and then obviously they come back into the room and the fire has already started, and it happened obviously because of because they were fighting, and so right here, obviously Hatsumomo uses that idea and starts to burn down the Sokia, just burn down her life.
Unfortunately, she almost did get
burned. She did.
Her hair went up.
I have to talk about Gong Li here for a moment, because the day we shot this, she never left the set. She needed to feel the emptiness, the anger, the torture, the sadness, all of it. So as we were relighting things and moving cables around her, she just stood in one spot and never moved, and just sat there crying quietly to herself so she would have the emotion you see in that face at the end there. And I'll never forget when Pietro and I put the sequence together, it was all there in that performance, and it pays off.
I could be her. Now I am Geisha to this house.
It was hard to be around her on these days, I remember.
Yeah. Well, she takes it so seriously. This is one of those shots that you do that you're afraid you've lost the light. And thank God we got it right before the light went. We were afraid that the light was too low, I remember. Because that's something that's unfair to ask an actor to do over and over again. Something that emotional.
This was another pivotal image.
Mm-hmm. We saw, there was a series of, during our research, we saw this incredible image of a torii gate with those bombers flying over them, and we said we need to do that in the film because that's the change of the end of a golden era of Japan. It's sort of perfect in a way that the demise of Hatsumomo really coincides with the demise of the Japan that we know. And in many ways, I think Hatsumomo does represent Japan itself.
This had a profound impact on everyone that would step on the set after they knew it in its, as you say, glory days.
Mm-hmm. It really was. I mean, we dusted down the entire set, and all the beautiful cobblestones, for instance, and streets were replaced with dirt, covered with dirt.
All the lanterns ripped to shreds.
Right. It was really shocking to walk onto the set. And if you see, there's sort of a tone to the light here. We actually, Dion came up with this incredible idea of covering the entire set in silk to be able to control the light, so we never looked like we were in Southern California here. We could have this, have the light be what we needed it to be. I mean, in Japan, there is something unbelievably magical about the light. And here, it was important to create a sense of coldness and starkness to the world.
But you must not go. The city is a prime target. Get your things, quickly. Nova and I are trying to find safe havens for as many of you as we can. Come. Work certificate. Nurse's aide. Friend of mine.
This, here you obviously see the chairman making sure he's taken care of. So Yuri, without telling her, he's showing, but he can't say. So he's there to protect her and send her away from harm.
This is the Arima. He will take you into the hills. Nobody has got a friend there. A kimono maker. Anyone stops you, show them this.
Do I have to go?
It's remote. You will be safe.
What about you? You said Osaka was dangerous.
Our factory is there. I have no choice.
This is so emotional, I think, ultimately, because will they see each other again, John? You know, will they ever, you know, the war, so many people obviously were lost, but the geisha world was... It was... There was so few left. This water transition and this shot was the most difficult shot in the film. Because... And it came from, actually...
Defeat. Shame.
Budgetary reasons, in a funny way. Because we didn't have the money, really, to show Japan during the wartime. And... But in an odd way, it forced me to create a transition that would take us through the war that was more poetic and more personal and subjective. So we see Dai obviously coming off. We see Dai in the water, which we believe is blood. And then we realize it's actually Dai coming from the kimono, and she is now no longer the beautiful geisha Sayuri, but she's an unrecognizable peasant, one of many. And this is all one shot, done with a techno crane that we had to helicopter in because where we were was so remote and unbelievably muddy. We could barely get the actors in and out, let alone the equipment.
It's freezing cold.
Yeah.
And slippery rocks, yeah, and current.
I remember, John, you were in that water you were in the water with wetsuit on, and they all had wetsuits on underneath their costumes. It was January, and it was freezing, and I remember, you know, the second we'd see y'all cut, they would go flying out of the water. This idea of the kimono being rinsed in the water, and also hung to dry on these bamboo poles is very real, and it's something that's done in rural parts of Japan. And there's an incredible book by Cecil Beaton that had images of these fabrics hanging on these bamboo poles. They're so stunning, and John Meyer and I saw those. He found them and brought it to me, and we said, well, this is the perfect place to play this scene between Nobu and Sayuri.
This is all that remains of our factories.
You drove John crazy with the colors.
Yeah.
You picked up, I want this one brown, and there's too many colors. And
I know. Well,
it's funny.
It was important, you know. Obviously, the red one needed to be there to make the transition work, and so I wanted more earthy colors. I remember when we first got there were a lot of very bright ones. It just felt wrong for the sequence. So John, being the incredible, you know, soldier that he is, he just ripped them all down and put up earth tones.
If a tree has no leaves or branches, can you still call it a tree?
With nothing but rubble at my feet.
It's extraordinary when you hear Koji speak. He speaks no English, right, John?
None.
And the fact that he was able to act and speak, I mean, I really am astounded by the work that these actors did to speak English, and it really is a singular achievement. And I think, in many ways, historic that we were able to use these international actors in their first English language role.
I need American financing. There is a man, a certain Colonel Derricks, who has the power to grant us a contract. I showed him your picture.
What's great about Z for me here is that she's you are able to see her older here. You see the transition. She's not just the young 15-year-old. You see the years of the war, and you see the maturity and the change. And I think she was you know, even though we shot out of order, she was very aware of constantly what age she was playing and where she was in her story.
I have no doubt.
She's only 25 when we shot this.
That you could still melt the heart of any man, no matter how resistant. I am not accustomed to
play. There's a shot coming up here. I remember Steven Spielberg saying, too, it was his favorite shot in the film, because it looks like there's literally water coming. This is it right here. Water coming from her face. One of those wonderful happy accidents that you find and love.
First American face.
Yep. This is the third time that we changed the Hanamachi look-wise. It's now the American occupation. This was also shocking, walking onto the set and seeing English signs and seeing chairs at tea houses and obviously, you know, military and vehicles and personnel. And but this was all based on real research we did. You see here now prostitutes are wearing the white makeup and calling themselves geisha. So the line becomes blurred between what a real geisha is and what a prostitute is. And I think that's where this confusion began. And the truth is, obviously, the prostitutes are the furthest thing from geisha. But the guys would say, I got myself a geisha girl. That's what the GIs would say. I got myself a geisha girl. And I think it really is about a lost art, at least in terms of the amount. It's still there and still incredibly strong, but it's just it's different now, obviously.
It was painful. It's hard to believe this is that beautiful apartment that they did that little dance in, and she met her for the first time.
It's true.
All broken up into rooms.
Yeah. Well, Mamiya is a survivor, ultimately, really. And you see that the tables have turned now. Sayuri now is trying to give Mameha support and encouragement and try to bring her to life as a geisha again. So the roles have switched.
I did keep one kimono. The Baron gave it to me when he became my danna.
Coming up here, I'll say is my favorite shot. it's actually very simple. It's just it's a close up of Sayuri, but to me it says everything, because you see everything in her face in one shot. Right here it begins. How she feels for Mameha. The sadness of the loss of the time, trying to lift herself up, the joy that she's trying to hold on to. I've told Z that, and I remember at some of the premieres she'd lean over to me and give me a little nudge, because she knows that's my favorite. And thank you, Pietro, for showing that to me and and saying, what do you think of this? Which was great.
So she's playing some of the geisha games with these.
This is ones we played in Kyoto,
yep.
Right, John?
Yeah, like a lot of those paper, scissor.
Yeah, they're like children's games.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, men disappear into the tea houses. You know, at that time, obviously, most of them were part of arranged marriages, so they didn't really love the women they were married to, and so they found, you know, their love in the tea houses, where they could choose a geisha, and that's who they had fun with, and that's who they, you know, had dinner with, and
it was accepted. Mm-hmm. The woman stayed home, and a lot of times they were glad to stay home and have the man go off.
Right.
Different cultures.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget Pumpkin coming onto the set, Yuki coming onto the set, and nobody recognized her. She just walked by everybody. Nobody even recognized her in her 40s do here.
I love this scene for her. It's pathetic.
It is pathetic.
So, who's this colonel?
And we also find out that she's lying through all of this in a few scenes. Every bit of it is a lie.
So,
it comes from the deep, deep hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Cash? Don't waste my time.
Yuki Kudo from Snow Falling on Cedars.
Yes.
and Mystery Train.
Mm-hmm.
Here we see the transition of everybody. Mother now, of course.
Businesswoman?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, not the geisha house isn't making money, so she's running the black market. And you see all of her stash right here in the old kimono closet. Everything from irons to...
And you see the little girl there in that last
liquor,
scene. She's
yeah.
keeping her investment going, preparing someone for the future.
The threadbare silk.
See? You are yourself again.
The world had changed completely, had he.
Obviously, this transition for Sayuri having to become a geisha again for only one reason. To reach him.
I love the scene. Z was supposed to wait for this guy, and she just goes right away.
We said, why? She said, oh, I'm too nervous. The character's too nervous because she... She has to tell him. She has to finally tell him. But she doesn't even know what he'll look like.
Just look at you, Sally. It's as if the war did not happen.
I'm so glad to see that the chairman's safe.
Please accept my apologies, asking this.
No.
I think she looks beautiful here. One of the most beautiful.
Yeah. Well, she's a radiant human being.
Yeah.
I watch the way she eats, the way she speaks. She's just charmed.
She is.
Not unlike a young Audrey Hepburn, you've
right.
always said.
Very much so.
What did you want? Thank you. I'm glad you're more stunning in person. It's my associate.
And Paul Adelstein is one of the mysteries as Lieutenant Hutchins.
A mystery that perhaps you can solve.
Would you mind? Can we?
Yes.
Colonel?
Of course.
He really, Ted Levine really tread the line, didn't he, John, between, you know, being this kind of...
Smarmy
character and being someone who's, you know, has
educated.
Integrity and educated integrity and classy and did a really great job.
Yeah.
He's such a good actor. Many people remember him from Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
This character is actually a Japanese character, and I remember Robin...
In the book,
and Robin felt it would be good to really sort of illustrate post-war, the compromises they have to make. And ultimately, I remember in the book, it was a Japanese minister who actually was the character, and this, I thought, made a lot of sense. Dinah Shore, specifically because Pumpkin talks about Dinah Shore.
Mm-hmm. And the three little sisters, the three geisha going off to
yeah.
try to help the chairman and
mm-hmm.
Nobu.
In any way they can, obviously.
Get their business back on track.
Now this is very much per Japanese custom that men and women bathe together. It's such a odd combination of things when you think that, you know, even just the glimpse of a wrist or the back of a neck is sensual, and the subtlety of that, and then the fact that in a bath they can be together like this. And I mean, it's not always like this, but this was directly from the book. And
different entrances, of course.
Yeah, yes. And it's not sexual. It's a ritual.
And the floating sake trays, and they have fruit floating in the water. It's
there's nothing quite like the Japanese bath. It's that's why every spa that I've ever seen is really based on Japanese culture, because it's just it's incredible ritual. You don't bathe in them, you soak.
The other is not. If you guess right,
The liar pays the price.
Oh.
It was also freezing cold.
Yeah. The water was warm, though, I remember, John.
We were both in the water here, yeah.
Yeah, I remember directing the water in big boots here. Mm-hmm. We were all in the water.
A fisherman caught a talking fish.
The other story is the true one. I haven't even had it yet.
You drink. If I drown, it's all you.
Your turn.
Fault.
Please.
So many things happening in this scene with just little glances and looks between everybody. And especially if you watch the movie again, you see what Pumpkin's doing here, how Nobu's feeling, jealous, obviously. The chairman trying to avert Sayuri's eyes. Sayuri desperate to do what she's doing right here, and which is desperately trying to connect with him and let him know that she knows who he is.
I think we have to stop
the game. And obviously, the chairman purposely stopping this game. So there really is so much underneath each of these scenes. There's a whole nother, obviously another layer. I think that's what made it interesting for these actors to play.
What is the protocol?
Excuse me?
I love this moment here, John, because Sayuri gets to stand up. You start feeling her strength, and she gets to tell him what a geisha is. It's not what you think it is.
If there were a price, you could never afford it.
Yes, the mask is a bit taken off, mm-hmm. You know, there. She doesn't have to play any games with him.
Right.
Some kind of twist, haven't you?
What did you promise him?
Your company, nothing more.
He seemed to expect a great deal.
If I had wanted...
This is another perfect example of working with a Japanese actor and a Chinese actor in one scene, especially a very emotional scene. I remember rehearsing this over and over again because we had to deal with the language issue. But I know Z, for instance, loved working with Koji because he's such a good actor.
Can't you see that I want you for myself? You have ruined me. Before we met, I was a disciplined man. I should not have asked you to come.
Such a tricky role to play because he loves her and he wants to possess her, which is what she doesn't want. She does not want to be possessed as an object, which is really how Nobu sees Sayuri. She wants to love freely.
And how did he let himself get in this situation? He's always the one that doesn't like Geisha. Mm-hmm. You know, and to allow himself this vulnerability is...
Mm-hmm.
Don't insult me again.
If he ratifies our contract, then I will be a man of means again. There is nothing I want more, Sayuri.
You start feeling that Sayuri is being trapped here. And she... You start to feel it the moment that she's at the airplane and Pumpkin arrives and so forth, and she starts being pulled away from the chairman. But here, the walls are closing in on her. This is where she's feeling that something has to change.
I do not like things held up before me that I cannot have.
When you first introduced me to Nobu.
She needs to be proactive now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just that's just not a geisha's practice.
No.
But I really think this scene here between Mameha and Sayuri really explains the difference in philosophy. I mean, Mameha really sees that a geisha has no choice. Geisha become geisha without choice. And that's how they live. They put their heart on ice, and they can't have the choice to
the
love.
The freedom of choice.
The freedom of choice to love. That's how Mameha exists. That's how she becomes the great geisha. But that's something Sayuri cannot deal with.
You learn. I don't want to learn. Sayuri! We don't become geisha to pursue our own destiny. We become geisha because we have no choice.
Obviously, that's not enough for Sayuri. She needs pursue her own destiny. And it's the water. You hear the water music. This water music, to me, that John Williams created here, very much feels like drowning, because I think that that's where she is here. And this, and you see this cue keeps going all the way through this whole sequence. It just keeps escalating and escalating.
It's 9 o'clock. Bring Noble to the pool on the far side of the garden. Not a minute before, not a minute after. Yes.
John, do you remember both of these shots were done about
so late,
3 weeks apart?
Oh,
maybe a month apart.
I thought they were going to say how late it
was. Oh
yeah,
yeah,
were.
Yeah. Yeah, but, yes, but sometimes,
apart, yes.
Well, we lost the light. That's why it was so late. And on Sayuri's side, we lost the light, so we had to do Pumpkins Reverse in a completely different location, weeks or months later.
Yeah,
it's
at least 1 month. Yeah. This is how far she'd go.
Yeah, I mean, this is the incredibly humiliating part of it all. Obviously, that she has to go this far to rid herself of Nobu and to so that she'll be free to reach the chairman. I mean, John Williams' score here, John, just really... I mean, when you play the sequence without it, it's a whole nother movie. But to have that tension...
Are we doing this or not?
...really makes it. Geisha rarely kiss. Am I right, John, about that?
That's what I was told.
Yeah. Because that's... something that's so personal.
It's funny, we say, I was told, we found a lot of discrepancy.
Yes.
Of course, like in any culture.
Well, of course, here's the great betrayal.
The denouement.
I remember when I've seen it in the audience, there's always a gasp there.
Mm. Even people that know, that read the book,
yeah. Well, because you just can't imagine that it's not Nobu, and you can't imagine that she would do this to her. And then here it's revealed, obviously. It's really classic in nature, the storytelling here. It's just, it's, you know.
Because I know how you feel about him. A long time ago, you took something from me. The only thing I ever truly wanted.
Deeply sad to me.
That's
the scar she'll hold forever.
I remember talking to Yuki a lot about this because it informed her entire character and how she played the latter half of this movie for herself. The wound, which Sayuri never meant to do. You know what I mean?
It's all perception. Like
right.
Life, you know.
This was actually shot in Northern California. And beautiful shot here that John, you actually did, which was incredible to have her step into that. That was fantastic. I love seeing the hair moving forward and her entering. This, the one CGI element here was there was a fence around, but we wanted to remove that so that she would, it would look as dangerous as possible, as if she would really maybe even possibly jump.
This was sad because communicating to her, I was back, way back on the hill, and she was out there all alone.
Yeah. And then, of course, here's our great helicopter shot coming up that we, our one helicopter shot in the film, but it was something that's rehearsed and rehearsed over and over again, and it really is, incredible thing to actually accomplish when you can do something with size like this that also tells story.
The heart dies a slow death.
This sequence here was something that we invented actually later on. This wasn't in the script because we needed to feel the sense of time and the sense of loneliness, and that she now is really empty, just a vessel, has given up her dream with the handkerchief.
Her eyes are deep water.
Her life is ultimately over, and she will be the geisha. She won't be, she will be the perfect geisha now. She will just live a life without heart.
It's how she's trained. It's how she'll continue on.
This is Japan, obviously a beautiful shrine in Kyoto. This is also Japan. This is actually right in the Gion district.
Their rest is shadows. Their rest is secret.
Sayuri, quickly. The tea house just called. You are to meet a very important client tonight.
Part I like about that transition there, what you did, was that all the other water is moving, and that's the one, as soon as she goes back to the Okiya, the first image is the water and the stones, and there's no movement in the water.
It really was, we looked for everything that we could find. Actually, that whole sequence was shot in Japan, every bit of it, and the feeling was, as we put this together, was to create sort of a dead world.
Finally, a return on my investment.
And you see here, Sayuri's putting on the mask again and starting again, but has
one day you will be as lucky.
Is hollow inside.
No geisha can never hope for more.
And that's what she's learning to live by, that no geisha can ever hope for more. That's it. That's your life is something you don't have any say in. Your life is given to you and you follow. And you don't lead. John Meyer built this pathway based on a stone path that we saw in the water in a shrine in Kyoto, and this is all shot actually in San Francisco. Everything fall that you see here was placed here because it really was winter. So all the color is something we brought in, as was the beautiful pagoda that John built here with the bells hanging from them. Well, this scene, John, is the scene of the film, because it's almost like you work back from this scene. I did that constantly when I was working with Doug Wright or I was working with Robin. It was always about working backwards from this scene, because this is the reveal, obviously. This is, it all has to play from here.
Chairman, what happened on the island?
Please, you do not have to explain.
But I have shamed myself so.
We were on this very small platform shooting this, and you know there were always 100 grip and 100 cameramen, 100 everybody, wardrobe, everything, and we're all out on this little island, and it is obviously very important that everybody be very still for this emotional scene so that they can play this. We all knew how very important this was. I couldn't even say cut at the end of the scene. Every time we shot it, we didn't do it that many times because you can't. But I remember everyone was weeping because finally these two, you know, it can speak from their heart, and it's interesting. You know, there's this very sort of grand big canvas on which is painted this very little small story. And that's what's so interesting. It's a very little story about a young girl.
Wish you could have told me.
And a man who changes her life by showing her act of kindness, and how she,
and so
she spends her life trying to reach him, and he has loved her all along. It's very small, and it all ends with this very small moment.
I hope it is not too late. Don't be afraid to look at me, Jill.
He calling her Chio again?
Right. He knew her as a child. He knows who she really is. It's more than the geisha, more than Sayuri, this invented persona.
Every step I have taken since I was that child on the bridge has been to bring myself closer to you.
And we hear Sayuri's theme. So beautifully played by Yo-Yo Ma here. And I remember the orchestra when they were playing this, John. I don't know if you remember this.
I remember.
They were weeping too. I just think it's because it's the release of finally being able to speak. And Sayuri's first real kiss in her life.
And as we always say, it's about finally finding the chairman, but it's about much more than that.
Mm. It's much more than boy girl meets boy.
Yeah.
It's about finding hope in life and being able to reach ultimately yourself, I think.
Through a connection, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You cannot say to them.
I think this final voiceover is very profound in many ways, because the truth is she'll never be his wife, because he is married, has children, as all men do have geisha, or most anyway. But for her, it's plenty. I think it really is ultimately about a story about a child who's ripped from her family and ripped from love, and then ultimately finds love again. Even though it's not a pure love in our culture, for her it's enough. And that's why we see this young child running with the joy and the hope of what that love can bring.
And still preserving a bittersweet finale.
Yep. This end sequence was thrilling to work on with the artist Carson Yu, because it really was about, obviously, about the water. And this is once again Isaac Perlman playing the chairman's waltz, and I loved the sort of abstractness of this. I see Stephen's name here, and he was incredibly encouraging, I have to say, and helpful along the way. Roger and Gary obviously were our heroes, financially saving us and helping us. And I really feel that Amy Pascal at Sony was someone who championed this for many, many years. And I'm so thrilled to work with her because of her passion behind this project. And what's interesting is, as you see, you start to see the clarity of what's coming. You see the obviously that it's been a kimono, which I thought was a lovely touch. And credits are becoming, I think, more popular now, because you can launch right into the movie. As you see, we have images. This is sort of in some ways like a bow, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah.
And I thought it was important because not many people know these actors, so to be able to connect their name to their face, I thought was good. But also, you remember them. We did it in Chicago too, and something I like remembering and seeing the company. It probably comes from my work in theater,
yeah.
Right? Exactly. So,
little bow for each.
Yeah. Suzuka. Such an extraordinary young woman.
Well, thank you for sharing this with us.
That was thrilling. I had a great time, John.
Yeah.
It's, you know, What's amazing about film is that it's so much more than just the 2 hours and 20 minutes. It's years of work.